A report issued last month from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention predicts the impact of Alzheimer's and related dementias in the United States will increase dramatically in the next four decades. In 2014, the CDC reports, about 1.6% of the U.S. population was diagnosed with dementia, about 5 million Americans. Last month's report projects that number to jump to nearly 14 million people, or what will be 3.3% of the population in 2060. Research is being done to better understand dementia-related diseases, but many studies have a similar problem. Not enough people participating in those studies. Michael Splain is managing partner for Recruitment Partners LLC and has worked in some capacity with Alzheimer's work for the past 3.5 decades. Last week, he was in Northwest Arkansas to help Arkansas-based Woodland Research connect with the public and ultimately get more involvement with Alzheimer's and dementia studies. He came to the Carver Center for Public Radio during his visit. He says there are multiple opportunities for people to participate.
The sad story is that with a 50 million person disease state of dementia across the world, any given day there are between 60 and 70,000 open opportunities for people to participate in research. And something's disconnecting. We have a devastating health condition, but somehow we don't have an ethos in the Alzheimer community or in the community in general, as we do, for example, in the cancer community. We don't have an ethos that participating in research is something that you can do to contribute or fight the disease. It's just not quite the same dynamic. So we started our company 3 years ago to really, with my background in political organizing and Alzheimer advocacy and my partner's background in clinical trials, build the proverbial better mousetrap. So we work for drug company sponsors and clinical trial sponsors, and then we work with companies like Woodland here in Northwest Arkansas to help them up their game in terms of recruiting people to trials.
Can you recruit people across the spectrum of Alzheimer's? We know that often there's early Alzheimer's trials, but can it go past that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things that we work with in the community is that there are my wife's a high school teacher, and her guidance people say, there's a college for everybody. Well, if you have a check in a C-minus average, I guess that could be true. But I think there are many, many more opportunities to participate in research than the public or even the Alzheimer community thinks of. A lot of the publicity, a lot of the focus has been on curative research in Alzheimer disease that's aimed at people in the earliest stages of the disease who can access a PET scan, who can tolerate multiple lumbar punctures and infuse drugs over time. I mean, that's a very important part of research, and it has recruitment headaches too. But the kind of trials that we're working on with Woodland are people in the mild to moderate stages of the disease who are really living with the burden. You know, we've worked on sleep trials. We've worked on, we're working on an agitation trial with Woodland. These are the places where caregivers and the people themselves have real burden, but somehow there's a disconnect that between the stages. There are also care trials. We've been involved in social care intervention trials where people are trying to innovate in how they can support families or support family caregivers better. And there are even couch potato trials. People can do surveys. People can give a little bit of their DNA into a tissue bank for later examination, obviously with the proper consents and controls. So there's a range of research opportunities, and sometimes that just gets missed in all the kerfuffle about the early stage stuff.
We've had some stories on our program recently about University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences trying to get a statewide registry for everyone. And one thing we've discovered over doing these stories is that a lot of medical studies have challenges getting enough people to participate. And I can imagine that's only magnified for Alzheimer's because of some of the issues you mentioned.
Well, and then I think we are a little bit of an ageist culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that doesn't help. And I think we are still, I think people with dementia all over the world, but I face stigma. It relates to how we think about mental illness, how we think about brain diseases, how we think about people that are differently able in their thinking. But there really is stigma and there's fear of Alzheimer's disease. I think many times we discount that. But it is interesting that we know also that about half the time people have Alzheimer's or a related disorder, they actually get a formal diagnosis in this country. We know further from public health surveying called BRFSS, the worst acronym ever, the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey that every state does every year. We know that people over the age of 45, that even when they see that their thinking is changing, when their function, how they live their lives, they don't talk to medical professionals about how their thinking is changing. As many as 60% of people over 45, according to this annual public health survey, don't talk to their physicians even when their changing in thinking is affecting how they live their lives. That's a big danger signal to me that there's something else going on here that is a barrier that we need to work on. Without regard to clinical trials, there's a public health issue here that we need to work on to get people better educated about dementia.
If someone's interested in helping research, what can they do?
Well, I think for this particular trial, they could call Woodland, 479-927-3000, and ask to talk to one of the pre-screeners about the Alzheimer clinical trial. More generally, the Alzheimer's Association runs a website called TrialWatch, or TrialMatch, excuse me, where people can go to the Alzheimer's Association website, put in certain information about themselves, and get matched to particular clinical trials. Broader than that, there's another website called CenterWatch where people can put in a zip code and find all the clinical trials, whether they're social care, couch potato trials, or active drug trials within a certain radius of a zip code. So those are kind of the resources for finding clinical trials.
I think you and your colleagues were recently in Rhode Island. The state was talking about updating an Alzheimer's plan. Do all states have an Alzheimer's plan?
South Dakota finally finished theirs, I think, this summer. So, yes, it's interesting. In the 1980s, I've been working with people with Alzheimer's and their families since 1986, so been around. In the 1980s, every state in the country but one did a state Alzheimer plan based on what we knew about Alzheimer's disease in the 1980s. Some very interesting public policies came out of that, particularly a lot of focus on access to diagnosis and respite for family carers who are bearing the burden as they do now of taking care of people with Alzheimer's disease. Fast forward to the new round of Alzheimer plans started in the year 2007 when the Alzheimer's Association, I was director of state government affairs at the time, and we built a campaign to get every state in the country to develop an up-to-date state plan because the jump in knowledge in Alzheimer's disease over 20 years was amazing. Particularly new is understanding how the tools of public health can be brought to bear on educating people about the disease, the value of early detection and diagnosis, and also what we can do to minimize our population risk of dementia in late life. New knowledge needed to be translated into policy. So, yes, every state now has an up-to-date state plan, and interesting of the plans that's kind of started in 07, 08, 09, states are updating those because the knowledge just keeps growing about what we could do about the problem, and the problem keeps growing. 5.5 million people living in the United States with Alzheimer's disease.
And many are living alone? Some are living
about alone? 20%. It's guessed. I mean, this is best guess. But, our other companies, Plain Consulting, we've done some taken a chance, and we've gone out to market to with a conference on living alone with dementia and really trying to find solutions. Yeah, it's estimated that probably 1 in 5 people with dementia live alone. Now, at the first conference, we did the conference first. Visit was in Orange County, California, and we kicked it off with a person with dementia living alone as the first speaker, and of course got quite an audience reaction. But the speaker got up to the microphone and he said, well, I live alone with dementia, but you know, there's living alone and then there's living alone. And all of us were like, what is this guy saying? But what he went on to basically say, there's living alone with kind of a network of support and people who know I've got dementia and people that have helped me organize grocery delivery or whatever. And then there's people that are just abjectly unbefriended. And they're kind of different problems. And they may have a different trajectory. But, you know, this demographic cake, we talk about the boomers as a demographic cake that's been baking since 9 months after the the end of World War II, which is literally true. But this demographic cake of living alone is also kind of an American way. The fastest growing type of household, according to the census in America in the last 30 years, has been an older adult living by them or herself. And now they're aging in place, and with age comes the greater risk of dementia.
I know that you addressed, I think it was in last November, a House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee about, you provided part of a global update on Alzheimer's and dementia in the world. We often here don't think of it as a global situation or problem, do we?
So you're a funny man. I grew up in what's called a three-decker in Boston. You know, flats.
Yeah.
You know, and mostly cold water. I mean, to imagine that I've been able to be involved at a global level in a problem like Alzheimer's disease, just I never, you know, I didn't sit around and dream about this as a kid. But we've been deeply involved with global Alzheimer's through our work with Alzheimer's Disease International at the UN and at the World Health Organization. And it was a real privilege to testify last November. But in fact, you know, we're talking with our population aging is the story of great public health success all over the world, including Africa. Africa is aging right along with the rest of us, probably 10 years behind in terms of the numbers, vast numbers of people that are over the age of 60 or over the age of 65. But yes, I testified. We talked about the fact that there's probably 50 million people living with dementia around the world, and that in the next 10 years, lower and middle income countries are going to bear the brunt of this. China and India will have more Alzheimer's cases in the next 10 years than anywhere else on Earth. Indonesia, another country. And what's interesting is people are activating in those countries. China, hard to keep track of what's going on in China for a lot of reasons, but China has a very, very active science establishment that's doing some things that are not been doing the same and or not the same science that we're doing in other countries. India, I was just in India, and the health minister announced that he will produce a dementia action plan for India in the next 6 months. And he said it in front of God and everybody. He came to our meeting from Delhi. It would be basically our Secretary of Health and Human Services coming to a meeting in Little Rock to announce a dementia plan. So I think that's pretty serious. And then in addition, you see a lot of in Indonesia, interesting place. The whole Alzheimer movement in Indonesia, fourth largest country in the world in population. People don't really know that. I think a lot of Americans don't know that. They've organized an Alzheimer movement on a platform of social media with people under the age of 25. They literally have 25,000 activists under the age of 25 that are doing the work of raising awareness, helping people find diagnosis, developing community responses to Alzheimer's disease, and it's all built on a platform of social media. It's unlike any other Alzheimer's association in the world.
And that's what's interesting about research is perhaps it doesn't – perhaps it provides findings that don't help us in contemporary times, but it is an investment in the future and children or grandchildren.
I think that's right. I think everybody tries to, when you've got a bad hand dealt to you from a disease, everybody wants to make some sense of it. They want to get some meaning out of a bad deal. And so traditionally, participation in research has been one of those ways in which people, well, maybe this won't help me. You hear it in how people talk about it. Maybe it won't help me to be part of this clinical trial, but maybe it will help somebody in a future generation. You see this all the time with genetic diseases. I've got genetic kidney disease, and believe me, you know, take my blood, please, because my kids and my grandkids are at great risk of getting that same genetic kidney disease. So I think it's, I think that is part of how people do it. I think it's also a way to, you know, to fight back. I mean, advocacy has been a great way in the Alzheimer community. We were talking earlier today. We saw Coach Broyles' grandson at the Broyles Foundation, and we were talking about his role as an advocate, including calling the hogs on the floor of the Arkansas legislature to help a bill pass about dementia many years ago. But, you know, advocacy has been a great expression of what can I do that's bigger than myself about this problem? What can I do to fight back? You know, the old expression from the early 80s, you know, fight AIDS, not people with AIDS. Right. I mean, I think it's the same kind of thing. And research is really, it's been a traditional way. And it's also represented, by the way, we make an enormous social investment in research. It's called our tax money. And so we really mean it as a country because we spend, we will spend in the fiscal year that just started, $40 billion U.S. dollars on our government-funded research establishment in this country. That's a commitment. That's a real serious commitment. So we really mean it, but it only motors if people participate. And that's what we come back to with people should, you know, if you're listening to this, you have a family member, you have a person with Alzheimer's disease that you care about, even if you work in the field. We met with some nurses today that are home care nurses. We'll be visiting some care communities later this week, you know, because this research opportunity around agitation is open to people that are living or being cared for in formal care settings as well as being cared for at home. So, you know, if you're interested, you're motivated, people need to pick up the phone, go to the website, talk to Woodland Research, talk to the screeners, talk to Dr. Udeffi and see whether or not there's a fit. The other thing about, you know, Dr. Udeffi is that, you know, he's thorough. And sometimes people get told they have Alzheimer's disease and it might not be, or they might not have had all the steps in the diagnosis actually taken. And Dr. Udeffi and his team are very apt as part of that initial screening process to look at the medical record and listen to the person and their family to make absolutely certain that they're not just somebody who got labeled with Alzheimer's disease, but in fact have had a thorough clinical diagnosis that leads to the conclusion that people probably have Alzheimer's disease.
Michael Splain is managing partner with Recruitment Partners, LLC, based in the Washington, D.C. metro area. He was in Northwest Arkansas last week to work with Woodland Research Northwest. You can find links associated with this and other stories you hear on our program at OzarksAtLarge.com.